Alright guys, welcome to this week's edition of The Sword and Staff. I'm one of your hosts, Josh Robinson, and joining me this week as always is my co-host,
Sketchy Richie.
And on today's edition of The Sword and Staff, Richie and I are going to be getting into a interesting conversation on the topic of Satanism.
Oh boy.
Oh man. And just so you guys know, this episode was Richie's idea.
Yeah, put the blame on me.
The sketchiness is coming out, and that is the source. But no, we thought this would be an interesting topic to talk about just because it seems to be getting more popular in some ways, I think. Like, you see...
Especially with the Church of Satan aligning with the left.
That, and you see it in the news like pretty frequently, like courthouse puts up statue of Satan, right. You know, like, and you know, a lot of people are like, what is going on? And so we're going to talk about that a little bit today.
Yeah, as hostility towards Christianity builds, there's alliances made with the Church of Satan.
Yeah. Interesting stuff. Also, we wanted to just let you guys know that Richie and I will be experimenting with new ways of recording audio for this podcast over the next few weeks. We're going to be changing some things up. So if there's an improvement in audio quality or it doesn't sound quite like it typically does, just know that that's what's going on. We've got some feedback on audio and some ways that we can make it improve. And so we're trying to, you know, just tweak a little bit here and there. So, yeah, so just wanted to throw that out there before we got into today's episode. So, Richie, let's just kind of take it from the top here, okay? So let's get into a conversation. Let's talk about Satanism. And let's talk about the different types of Satanism, because I didn't really know until I started looking into this that there were different types of Satanism.
Yeah.
Like, most people probably don't know that. Like, whenever people hear the word Satanism, most of them probably just think, don't you just mean people who worship Satan? Like, right, isn't it as simple as that? And it is, but it's not. So let's just take it from there. Yes and no. So let's take it from there.
Right. Satanism is usually divided into two categories. So you have theistic Satanism, which is a spiritual practice. So that's where you have actual devil worshippers. Like, you have people that believe in the how do I describe it? Like, the way Satan is depicted, the devil is depicted in the Abrahamic religions.
Yeah.
So you have that, and then you have magic and occult tied to that. And then you have the atheistic Satanism, which is a sort of a rebellion. It's sort of anti-culture, anti-morality, really anti-structure of anything.
Yeah. Yeah, from what I've seen, from what I understand, that seems to be how most people are thinking about it. I've seen it also described as esoteric and rational Satanism. So esoteric relates to theistic or religious Satanism, people who are worshiping Satan. And then rationalistic Satanism is more in reference to the other kind of Satanism,
right.
So theistic
Satanism is
an atheist,
veneration or worship to an actual spiritual being.
So there's esoteric knowledge involved there.
And then the atheistic Satanism is more using Satan as an archetype or a symbol.
Yeah, that's right. It's rational.
Right.
And they're really doing it for a reason. And basically, so this can kind of lead us into a conversation on rationalistic or atheistic Satanism. Basically, what's going on here is, like you said, they're using Satan as an archetype. They say that they're not worshiping Satan,
right.
Because most of them are atheistic, like we were saying here. But basically what they're doing is they're looking at Satan as an archetype where his rebellion against the status quo, in particular God.
Yeah.
They use that and they want to model that. And most of the time, like if you get on YouTube or whatever, you're going to find videos of Satanists who are rationalistic or atheistic. And basically the only thing that they exist for is hating on Christianity.
To be a pain, really.
Yeah, to be a pain. Yeah. And to push for religious liberty.
Yep.
And to rebel against what they think is theocratic Christianity in the United States. So, like, you've got a courthouse that, like, has, say, the Ten Commandments up.
Yep.
And they're like,
pretty sure it was in Oklahoma.
Yeah, it was in Oklahoma. And so they're like, ah, religious freedom. So because of that, you also have to put up a statue of Satan. Yep. That's basically what they exist for. So there's not necessarily a whole religious, like, there's not a liturgical tradition, that type of thing to it. Like, they're not the type of people that you're going to see out there, like, performing, I think, a ton of rituals. I mean, I'm not saying that they don't do rituals and that kind of stuff. Maybe they do. But they're not into it necessarily because religious reasons.
Yeah, you can almost link it to the way atheists practice meditation.
Yeah.
Like, there's definitely a spiritual element to it, even though they would deny it.
Yeah.
But it's unavoidable.
It is. Well, so that's what I was going to say. But even though they say that it's not religious, the reality is it's unavoidable.
Absolutely.
And so it's still yet playing out this greater archetypal battle between good and evil. And you're still aligning yourself with the side of Satan and with the kingdom of darkness. So at its core, even though they say that it's not religious, it's still yet inherently religious.
It is.
Even if they say that it's not. So, okay. So let's talk about theistic or esoteric Satanism. So this one seems to be quite a bit deeper to me than others. This is the people who practice it spiritually. Like, there are liturgics and rituals that go along with this. There's hierarchy, tradition, that kind of thing. So maybe you can tell us maybe about some of the tenets of people who hold to that. I don't know if you're super familiar.
It's really a giant mixing pot. Like, in a way, it reminds me of a darker version of almost folk magic, because every individual has their own practice, their own version, their own way. Like, they have a basic tenet, let's just basically do what thou wilt. I mean, that's across all of Satanism, but they can add to that and add their own elements of the occult, like tenets of Aleister Crowley and his beliefs and his structures. So it just depends on the individual practitioner.
Yeah, and so as I was digging into it a little bit, the people who are a part of the esoteric or theistic branch of Satanism, they're very involved in magic, it seems like. Like, there's a ton, it's majorly occultic, and really that's very LaVeyan, like Anton LaVey. So let's talk about Anton LaVey a little bit. That would maybe help listeners understand maybe the differences here. So Anton LaVey is basically the father of modern Satanism.
And Anton LaVey is probably the biggest clown I've ever seen in my life. Like, when you Google the guy and you see him in this, like, this Halloween costume of, like, this little pitchfork and horns on his head, I mean, he represents the absolute joke of religion that he holds. I mean, it's chaos. And he's, I don't know, his thinking, it's just, honestly, that sort of Satanism, to me, across the board, is people who have come from, I don't know, in some interviews he talks about his overly religious family and things like that. It's people who are just in rebellion against Christianity and want to lash out against it.
Pretty much. It's basically going to the extreme is basically what it is. But, you know, some of the stuff, so I checked out some videos of Anton LaVey, and it's kind of humorous to me as a pastor in some ways, because, like, he's wearing, like, a Roman pontiff collar, like clerical collar. I'm like, you know, they've got a version of the mass.
You know the band Ghost?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
They take a lot of their inspiration from Anton LaVey.
Yep. And so it's just, I don't know, it's just kind of funny in some ways to me. But You know, the thing that I noticed about LaVey, though, like I was listening to him, like there's some videos on YouTube.
Where if you think about Anton LaVey, he was a fan of Aleister Crowley, and Aleister Crowley's work, it really makes up a large chunk of the occult basis.
I want to get into Satanism. I want to get into that more here in just a moment, because I kind of view Aleister Crowley as the predecessor to LaVey and Satanism. And we can talk about that more here in a minute.
Even though Aleister Crowley would not claim the bunch, they still trace their roots to his philosophies.
Absolutely. He didn't. Yeah, we'll get to that a little bit more here in a second. But it's interesting because as I was listening to LaVey, he's very much a Nietzschean. Like, and so I'm talking about like Friedrich Nietzsche. We've talked about Nietzsche a little bit.
Yeah.
We've talked about it in some of the Lord of the Rings stuff. We talked about it in, I think we talked about him a little bit in the Archetypes series we did too.
We did.
Yeah. But, you know, his big idea is basically the will to power. And LaVey really is playing off of Nietzsche. And basically LaVey talks about, if you watch any of the videos that he's in, he'll basically say that inside man there's this beast and this will to power. And what man ought to do is shun the Judeo-Christian religion and God and ethics, and that they should do what thou wilt, which is playing off of Aleister Crowley and the Law of Thelema, which we'll talk about again here in a little bit more in a minute. But he basically says that you should do what thou wilt as long as it doesn't impose on anyone else, which sounds very libertarian to me.
Yeah, I mean, even the Wiccan read and things in witchcraft is, in it harm none, do what you will.
Yeah.
So it's so carry over.
Yeah, so I'm probably just made our libertarian friends mad who listen, but, I always hear our libertarian friends saying that they will. I remember Austin Peterson whenever he ran for president, and, I can't remember if it was 2016 or when it was he ran for president, but he was like, him and John McAfee, God rest his soul, they were the big libertarian candidate parties. But Gary, Gary Johnson, I think, was the guy who won the nomination. But, you know, I remember Austin Peterson saying he wanted homosexuals to be able to carry ARs and smoke marijuana. And that was the kind of society that he wanted to live in. Like, live and let live. And basically, is do what you want as long as you don't hurt someone else.
Right.
Like, and I'm just like, that's very, whether you know it or not, that's very satanic. Like, that's very much the Law of Thelema, do what thou wilt. Yep. It's very similar. Like, do what you want as long as it doesn't, like in the LaVeyan sense, harm someone else.
Yeah, and you'll hear a Satanist, they linken their theology back to the garden, back to the lies that the serpent was whispering to Adam and Eve.
Yeah, and so, but basically, though, LaVey was a big-time Nietzschean. He thought that man had this beast inside of him that desired to power and willed to power. And basically that what man needed to do was to let that beast out and to integrate it into his own life. And that's basically what you get. And he thinks that that occultism was a major tool that could help man in that. He was a big-time occultist. He also had weird sexual ethics, as you could imagine.
Yeah.
But now we can get into the Crowley stuff. So that's basically, he like I said, there's also the religious side of it. Like it's basically an inversion of everything in Christianity. Yeah. They have their own version of the Mass. There's various different, it's so weird to say this, but denominations, you could think of them in Satanism. Like there's the Church of Satan, there's the Satanic Temple, I think there's another one here. Let me look at my notes again. There's that. This is an atheistic Satanism, but, you know, there's the First Satanic Church, the Satanic Temple, the Church of Satan. But within theistic Satanism, you kind of get some different stuff here. Like, you get, like, Luciferianism.
Yep.
Another one called the Order of the Nine Angles. And then this was one that I heard about earlier called the Temple of Set. There was a guy with the last name of Aquino. I can't remember what his name was. I'm not talking about Thomas Aquinas.
Yeah, let's get that straight.
No, I'm not talking about Thomas Aquinas. I cannot remember his name. But he basically said that you could trace Satanism all the way back to Egypt with the Temple of Set. And so that's what the Temple of Set is. But yeah. But yeah, so they've got various
rituals.
Which
is why you see such huge Egyptian influence in Aleister Crowley's work.
Yeah, we're going to get... Yeah, so that inevitably leads us into Crowley. So I know that somebody commented on one of our posts that said that we were going to be talking about Satanism, and they said, make sure to start with Aleister Crowley. And that's probably a good idea, even though Crowley would have... He actually said that he wasn't a Satanist. So... Let's start there. Like, how is it that you think, Richie, that Aleister Crowley influenced somebody like Anton LaVey?
I think that Anton LaVey has an obsession with mysticism. Mm-hmm. And literally, Aleister Crowley was the king of esoteric mysticism in his day. Yeah. I mean, he would visit world leaders and they would take his counsel. And, I mean, he had just huge sway over people. And there's this element that I've noticed in Satanism that's the same in the occult. They talk about, when you talk about magic, they say magic comes from pain. Magic comes from brokenness, from rebellion, from hurt. So that's where you source a lot of it in your rituals. You take things that have made you a victim in your life, or things that you have no control over. That's what it is. It's a lashing out to gain control.
Hmm.
So there's this sense of lashing onto the spirit of rebellion, the spirit of, like, just the sinfulness of man, the primality of man, and deifying that thing. So it's, yeah.
Well, that's really interesting. So I'm way less familiar with this than you are. So I think another way that you can see the direct influence of Crowley on, say, Anton LaVey is just the occultism. And then really just a recycling of the Law of Thelema.
Yeah.
You know, do what thou wilt. Even though Crowley would not have claimed to have been a Satanist, he would have claimed to have been an occultist and probably a pagan. I mean, he thought the gods existed, yeah. But he liked to dabble with the Egyptian ones. So, yeah, so he definitely had an influence on Satanism for sure, though.
Oh, absolutely.
Like, even if you go right now, I'm pretty sure that if you go right now, and that you, if you look at modern Satanism.
Well, they call him the father of modern day occultism. Yeah. So there's not a branch in the occult, Satanism included, that doesn't have roots in Aleister Crowley's teachings.
Yeah. Well, if you go and you, if you look at Satanism on, like, say, Wikipedia, if you look under the section of modern Satanism, there's a picture of Aleister Crowley there. Yeah. And it's because he influenced it. His teachings filter down to Anton LaVey and, you know, that kind of thing. Now, here's something that I noticed, and you don't have this on the notes, but, so we can talk, this will get us into some of the symbolism of Satanism. You did have that on there. Let's talk about the symbolism a little bit, because I want to talk about something that I noticed with it. But, what is the symbolism of Satanism?
What do you mean?
Like the sigil. The sigil of...
All in LaVey and Satanism?
Yeah.
Like the sigil of Baphomet.
Yeah. Okay.
So it's an inverted pinnacle, mm-hmm. and it's got the goat's head in it. And that's something that's deeply tied to the occult, with the archetype of Baphomet, this androgyn, this sort of mixture, this chaos monster. But...
Yeah, he's a hybrid.
Yep.
Yeah. So it's interesting... Because it's going to sound weird to people. I know it's going to sound weird, but it just is what it is.
It is what it is.
So like I said earlier, that Satanism is basically an inversion of the real deal of Christianity. It's a rebellion against that, right? That's right. What Satan does. And it may come as a shock to people that the pinnacle is actually in the Christian tradition and is a symbol used in the Christian tradition. People may not know that. But it is. It's associated with the five wounds of Christ.
Well, you'll see in a lot of pagan books and books on witchcraft, you'll see witches claim that the pinnacle was robbed by the dark arts. So people that practice the dark arts, like Satanism, stole it from them.
Yeah.
But pagans literally adopted it from symbolism that was used in the church.
Yeah. And so, like, if you go back and look at some old cathedrals, you'll actually... find the pinnacle in stained glass in a lot of them. And it's because they're thinking about it as representing the five wounds of Christ. So the top, like the top point of the pinnacle, is where the crown of thorns sit. That's the head. Then you've got the two on the side, two sides of the pinnacle. That's both hands. And then you've got this bottom part, and that's the 2 feet, right? It's the five wounds of Christ on the cross. So you'll see that in the Christian tradition. And Satanism, it's interesting, takes it and it inverts it. Yeah. It flips it on its head.
Paganism takes it to represent sort of the four natural elements and then an element of spirituality.
Yeah.
So then paganism rips it further down from that and inverts it to something dark.
It's interesting to me, and maybe this ties us into Baphomet a little bit more, but I noticed that the symbolism, even though it's got like what looks like it's a male goat because it's got horns, the symbolism is very feminine, though.
Honestly, there's no better symbol for their spirit of rebellion than Baphomet. Yeah. Just his very being breaks all the rules of gender norms, of created normality, of balance. It's basically your be your own sort of thing.
Do what thou wilt. Yep, it's exactly. Androgynous, right? But so the, like the simp like with the pentagram though, which I want to talk about more about the pentagram here in a minute and how that can be used in ritual and like. Like, that's my dogs. But, like, how that could be used in sigil, like, sigil, as a sigil in ritual stuff. Because people might be unfamiliar with how that works. And I think that could be interesting and enlightening to them. But it's taking something that's masculine, representing the five wounds of Christ, and you've got the point going up, right? It's, here we go, it's phallic.
Yeah.
You know, it's masculine.
Oh, absolutely.
And it takes it and inverts it, and it puts it down, and now you've got what's the shape of a chalice, which is feminine, right? It's receptive. It's the womb. It's receptive. Yeah. And it's just interesting how that... So you've got the male goat head, but with a feminine star, feminine chalice, and it makes sense of why you get the picture of Baphomet, the androgynous goat, because, I mean, that's exactly what's going on with the symbol of the pentagram. It's androgynous. So if you guys don't know what we're talking about here with Baphomet and the symbolism, if
they Google the statue of Satan in Oklahoma, mm-hmm. it is a statue of Baphomet.
Yeah, that's right. It's a statue of Baphomet. But let's talk about the symbolism of this one, okay? Because people have seen this before, okay? But it's usually a goat-headed man, but he has breasts, right? So it's androgynous. It's got wings. There's the moon over it, right? There's a pinnacle on the head, and there's a finger. Like there's two hands, right? There's,
as above, so below.
As above, so below. There's one hand pointing up. There's one pointing below, and so it's interesting, isn't it? Because it's purposely androgynous, casting off the binary that God wrote into creation, which right. also makes sense, Richie, of why feminism and Satanism go hand in hand.
Right, and what is that? I should know this, but what is that in the occult?
And the LGBTQ movement. I forgot that.
What's that phrase that's tattooed?
Solve et coagula. Yes, in
that's
Latin.
Even tattooed on J.K. Rowling's arm.
Solve et coagula, which means...
Which is Baphomet, right?
Which means dissolve. Yeah, it says on Baphomet's arm, solve et coagula, which means in Latin, dissolve and then coagulate.
Right.
So basically, tear it down and rebuild. So, yeah.
Absolutely.
So, yeah. Okay. All right. So, we're on the topic of symbolism. Let's talk about how the pentagram functions as a sigil. So
honestly, the pentagram has a relationship to man, to a picture of man, even in the occult, even in paganism, because in paganism the four points represent created elements and then an element of spirit. Mm-hmm. But if you think about it, in the occult, in paganism, the four elements relate to the created being. So earth is the body, fire is the spirit, water mm-hmm. is the blood, mm-hmm. and air is See.
It's the breath of life.
Breath of life, yeah. And those relate to a picture of man. And then, so you can see how the church and paganism would relate, like the church would relate that to an image of Jesus.
Yeah, because he's those things, right? Yeah. He's a man. He's also God with his hypostatic union. So symbolically, that works, right? So what is, let's talk about, this is how most people are probably going to be familiar with the pentagram, even though they probably don't understand the sigil part of it. But first off, like, what is a sigil? What's it used for? And then we'll talk about how the pentagram functions as a sigil.
Oh,
and
gosh.
What's a sigil?
When I was in the occult, probably my main practice involved sigil magic. Mm-hmm. So sigils are, they're concentrated intention. So there's lots of different ways people use to create sigils. So some people will write out an alphabet in a circle, and you take a pen and you draw lines to basically writing out your intention, and then you take away the letters and you're left with a symbol. Mm-hmm. Or there's people that will just meditate and think on their intention as they're sketching and drawing, and use sacred geometry to come up with things like that. But it's definitely, it's an individual sort of practice. So it depends on the individual.
Right. I've seen videos out there of people, how they create difference, and everybody's got their own method. But basically, yep, what it is, if I understand it correctly, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, it is a symbol that a person creates that is loaded with their intention, right?
Right.
So
like when we did the episode on thought forms, a mm-hmm. thought form could be, in its own way, considered a sigil.
Yeah, okay. So let's talk about it basically with somebody drawing it out before we get to that. That's complicated. But, okay, so somebody draws a symbol, and as they're drawing the symbol, they're creating it with the intention to say, maybe it'll help, this sigil can help bring them financial prosperity.
Right. It's something manifested, something
It's manifesting your internal intention.
Right. It's something for them to focus on that intensifies that concentrated energy and thought.
Yeah. And it's kind of like law of attraction. So it's kind of like law of attraction. Like if I have this intention and then I manifest it here in this physical way with this sigil.
A physical way to do guided meditation, because I know people who will take their intentions and write it, and when they finally come up with a sigil, they'll take it and put it on a piece of paper, mm-hmm. and they'll burn it, and from the ashes they'll draw the sigil on their body daily, and every time it wears off they're reminded to redraw the symbol, to mm-hmm. refocus, to realign that energy to that intention. And it's really a form of guided meditation, of focus.
That's interesting. There's a lot that I can say about that. Getting into some of the work with Jonathan Peugeot and him talking about attention and how attention works. But, you know, I'll save that for another time. But, okay, so let's talk about now how sigils are used in work with deities or gods or that kind of thing. Because we've talked about that a little bit with witch talk, okay? But how do you think that Satanists are using this pentagram as a sigil? Are they using it to work with Satan? Like, are they using it to summon Satan and use it?
To summon Satan is an odd way to describe it, but it's kind of what they're doing. I know when you even talk about the Lesser Key of Solomon, the reason that each spirit in the Lesser Key has their own sigil is a way of taking these ethereal sort of abstract ideas and personalities that they're calling demons and condensing them into something physical, something individual, and containing their individual attributes. So it's a way of personalizing something that's abstract.
Okay. So do you think that's what Satanists are doing with the pentagram?
Oh, absolutely.
Okay. So you don't think that they're necessarily like doing a ritual to, like, the best word I have is summon, to, like, manifest Satan and using it as a way to, like, hold Satan? I don't know if that would be the right terminology.
I mean, kind of to hold what they believe Satan is, like, their idea of Satan.
Yeah, okay, gotcha. All right. That's really interesting. And so, okay,
So a lot of it is just basically a thought form that they've created of what they believe Satan to be. Because, mm-hmm. I mean, you have Luciferianism that worships a being that they're calling Lucifer.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have a lot of people that don't even believe that Lucifer is...
Yeah.
Like a being at all that has any connection to Satan.
Yeah. Okay. So let's talk about what we think some of the issues with this are. Obviously, you're worshiping Satan.
Yeah.
Like, number one, okay? But I think that another thing, too, is that it obviously cannot lead to human flourishing. And I think that, honestly, like, for men who are caught up in Satanism, that it is feminizing to men. There is nothing more feminizing than pleasing your flesh.
Yeah.
Honestly. Like, so you can think of it this way. The spiritual is masculine. The material is feminine. I mean, that's actually where we get the word mother from. It comes from the word mater. And mater is also where we get our word matter. Matter yeah. from, right?
Substance.
Yeah, substance. And so, father comes from the word fater and potter. And so, priestly, spiritual, that kind of thing.
Yep.
I think that Satanism is inherently feminizing. And I think for men who are caught up in that, it's going to obviously, apart from the part about worshiping Satan, it's going to run into a lot. You're going to run into a lot of issues, I think. And so, actually, if you're wanting a spirituality that is masculine, Christianity, you can't do better than that because you have a father. Right, you have a father, you have a masculine God in whom you are in communion with.
Right,
and it's just interesting to me as I like it, as I've been like watching, a lot of Satanists online and on YouTube, kind of preparing for this episode, because I don't think that's something that a lot of people talk about. I don't think a lot of people talk about that aspect. But it makes sense, though, with the symbolism, though, right? Because it's androgynous. Yeah. Like, what do you think that it's going to do? Oh, it's going to tear down the binary.
Yeah, Baphomet became the sort of poster child for the left agenda, for the leftist agenda and the LGBTQ group and things like that. Sort of that spirit of rebellion.
Yeah. Well, I mean, think about the flag, right? The pride flag. It's Solvay et Coagula.
Taking the symbolism of the rainbow and
taking the symbolism of the rainbow, right? I mean, it's dissolve and then coagulate or unify, right?
That is literally the war cry of the left.
Yeah,
phrase.
I mean, that's the symbolism of the rainbow. That's what it is. It's multiplicity forming a unity, and it works as a symbol, and it's the same. But people, I don't think, connect it. I don't think people see it, but it's the same. It's exactly the same. So it's no wonder that the left and Satanism are bedfellows. It's the same ideology. It's the will to power. It's releasing the thing within you, the beast within you, and being who you are.
Right.
Yeah, right? Being you.
Right. There's very few places that you won't find the Church of Satan when it comes to... strongholds of the left. So especially with things like women's reproductive rights and abortion.
That's right.
You'll have feminist groups marching and protesting alongside with officials from the Church of Satan. Mm-hmm. So they definitely are allies.
Well, that's one of the big time things with Satanists is they are majorly into
agents of chaos.
Well, that makes sense because you're following the original agent of chaos.
Right.
Right? So it makes plenty of sense. But if I'm not mistaken, like there are let me look here online. I think that there are signs out there that I've seen various people. Yeah, there it is. That various people have shared about the satanic temple is sharing signs out there. And they're using abortion rituals to claim religious liberty against heartbeat bills like in Texas. So It's mind blowing in some ways. Well, it shouldn't be, but you know, it. I think that that just goes to show the flaw in religious liberty. But I'm a monarchist, so what can I say?
There you go. Yep.
So yeah, I would not mind having a monarchical, theocratic state. You know, I wouldn't mind that at all. But anyway, so yeah. All right, so let's talk about Satanic Panic, because we're kind of touching on the edge of it anyway, because we were talking about rituals, ritualistic abuse, abortion rituals, and that kind of thing. So, Richie, tell us a little bit about what this event known as the Satanic Panic, and just some of the claims of what went on in the Satanic Panic and, you know, that kind of thing.
Well, it was a lot of people think it was an outbreak of mass hysteria.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it was an event that spanned the 70s and 80s and some, I guess, into the 90s as well. But a lot of crimes relate that people thought were related to ritualistic abuse. So, there was infanticides and murders and things that were going on across the country. And, I mean, people were looking for Satan under every bush, under every tree, under every rock, and it was a huge deal.
Yeah. So, from what I understand, it happened from, like, the 60s to the, like, through the 80s, I think, is really what it, you know. But the thing is, though, so, like, apparently a lot of people, like, went to jail. Like, there were people imprisoned because of, like, claims that this person was a Satanist.
Yeah. I mean, you had things going on, like, the Manson murders and things like that were ritualistic in nature, and they just did nothing but
fuel
the fire.
Yeah, that's right. But the thing is, though, so like if you go on like YouTube and you watch videos on the Satanic Panic, you're going to get these skeptics who are going to be like, but there really was ever never no evidence, and but then like I was watching one earlier, and then the guy turned like right around after, he was like, but there was never any evidence that there was actually this stuff was going on. He's like, but in the late 90s, early 2000s, there was some satanic ritualistic murders that occurred somewhere and like led to church burnings and, you know, all that kind of stuff. Like, that's a major thing in like places like Norway and stuff like that.
Well, a lot of them, the skeptics of that sort of era will point to the case of the West Memphis Three, and that those boys that were they were very rebellious, like young kids and teenagers, and they dressed in like gothic sort of like emo clothing, and because of that, the town sort of associated them with Satanism and blamed them for a murder. And I mean, decades later, the DNA evidence helped to overturn their sentence, and they were released. And it was a terrible injustice, but they point to that case as an anchor point for the whole mass hysteria.
Yeah. So this might be a good section for some application before we wrap this episode up. But have you ever encountered anybody who was, like, truly, like, a Satanist?
Oh, yeah.
Because I have, too. You go ahead and, I'll kind of give you a story. I'll kind of change some details of it just to protect people. But I worked in the prison system at one point, prior to being a pastor. And one of the things that you have to do if you are working in corrections is you have to provide offenders, residents, whichever language.
And Satanism is very popular in the prison system.
I mean, majorly.
You go to West Virginia State Penitentiary. I've been there several times doing investigations. And the walls are just covered in inverted pentagrams and the sigils of Baphomet. And there's former inmates that have been on paranormal shows have given interviews about taking sheets and drawing the sigil of Baphomet on it and watching them blow in the wind and using that sigil as sort of to add motion to it to see and conjure Satan in the building.
Yeah.
And, I mean, it embodies that spirit of rebellion against the system. So. Yeah.
Well, so whenever I was there, like if a resident or an offender asked for a Bible, you had to provide them one. And like we kept them in stock. But also, because of religious freedom laws, you also had to do the same thing with other religious material as well. And we had, at one point, we had a person, an offender, who was a practicing Satanist and who had to be provided, I wasn't the one who provided it, but had to be provided with a satanic Bible, who, you know, was, which Anton LaVey was the author of.
Yep.
So, and there was some, I mean, just strange character. Let's just say
strange
that.
Strange character.
Strange character. I mean, there were some other things that went on with, you know, there too, but that was my encounter with it. I've not come across that anywhere else other than in the prison system whenever I was there at one point. Like, I don't know any practicing Satanists. But I'm sure they're out there.
I do, just from my sort of associations with the occult and the paranormal. So in my investigations and some of the circles that we've traveled in, I've met a bunch of different... I've met atheistic Satanists. I've met theistic Satanists, and they're just... Yeah, I know a bunch of them.
So let's talk about maybe what somebody should... Think about how you would minister to someone who is
practicing Satan. You need to think of these people as deeply wounded people who are trying to deal with their trauma. Like, it's the same with the occult. It's the same with magic. It's people who are just consumed with this victimization, and they're it's a desire for power. It's a desire to have control over a situation, over a person, over an idea, over a set of rules or philosophies that they feel has made them a victim.
Hmm. Yeah, that's interesting. That's not the first place that I would have went if I was thinking about it. I would have been like, it's a person who wills the power and, you know, wants to be.
But I can see very powerless.
I can see somebody who is very powerless would be the person who would desire to power. So I could see that.
And that's why you see people that have truly broken lifestyles end up in the occult.
Yeah, I would say also people who have probably been hurt by churches as well, and so in a reaction against that, they go to the extreme, right?
I mean, even with my practice in the occult, I mean, that was during the darkest time of my life when I was just drowning in anxiety and I felt powerless, and magic, the occult, it gave me a sense of power, a sense of control, a sense of authority, a sense of being the author of my own destiny.
Bending creation to your will.
Right.
Yeah, I can see that. I can 100% see that. So on a spiritual level, like, what is it that somebody should expect? Like, are some of these people that you're going to encounter, like, are they going to be possessed? Or are they going to be? I mean, I would think that they were. Some of them were. Would be.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
Like, but here's the thing. And this is the reason why I brought it up. It seems to me that there's the possibility of something far more insidious than possession of demons at work in Satanism. Okay? So we're not talking about being possessed by the spirit of a dead Nephilim or a Rephaim, right? Yeah. Like, we're talking about interacting with a principality.
Right, they're embodying, like, this primal essence of the original fall, of sin, of rebellion, that sort of the this, I don't know how to describe it.
We're talking about the apex of the infernal circles is what we're talking about here. Like, that is the being that one is devoting worship to, attention to, all of those, seeking to embody them. And so it could be something far more insidious than just demon possession.
Oh, absolutely.
So that's something that people should be aware of. Now, some people are like, wait, but isn't Satan a demon? Like, and that's, you know, for us, like, we hold that there's a distinction between demons and fallen angels and those types of things. I don't think that they're quite the same. And we've talked about that a little bit before in the series that we did on spiritual beings back in the day. So you guys can go back and listen to that if you'd like more information on that. But basically, what I say that a demon is, that is the disembodied spirit of the giants from Genesis chapter 6. The Rephaim, the Nephilim, those types of things. Those are, they're unclean spirits.
Right.
Because they are the product of unclean relations. Okay? So that's why the New Testament calls them unclean spirits. They don't call them unclean spirits because they forgot to wash their hands.
Yeah.
They're unclean because, literally it means bastard spirits in the original language. So that's a that's demon possession. You're possessed right. by a spirit that has been around since the time of the flood.
And you'll see that when you encounter these people,
yeah.
when you're talking with these people, they don't care to hear truth.
Mm-hmm.
They don't care to hear reason or logic. Their entire spiritual worldview, their entire purpose is to cause chaos, to make a mockery of order, of Christianity, of anything that, like, especially when you go to witness to these people, it's hard to get through to them because they've formed this sort of cocoon around themselves that it's just rebellion. I mean, it's they're just not open to a lot of the things people would use to witness to people.
Yeah. So that's something that people, I think, should keep in mind. Well, if they do encounter this, that you might be...
There's a hard shell that you have to break through to get to these people. Like, they've encased themselves in rebellion and sin and just this desire to normalize those things and to be empowered by those things.
Yeah, you might be encountering someone who has gotten a hold of something far more sinister and dark than just demons.
Right.
You might have found somebody who's embodying the Prince of Darkness. Like, it's dark stuff. Even for those who claim to be atheistic or rationalistic.
I mean, just the way that Satanists, I mean, describe their philosophies. I mean, they're trying to, even atheistic Satanism, talking about an archetype, they're trying to embody this original spirit of the fall, of sin, of rebellion against the Creator.
Yeah.
So absolutely taking that spirit of Satanism, that spirit of Satan into themselves.
Yep, that's good. So I mean, you need a local church to be a part of, I think, to...
It's different than witnessing to someone who is a pagan or an occultist because they structure their belief system on natural revelation, on truth. They're truth seekers. They're someone who is looking for meaning and patterns in the creation. So when you talk to pagans and you can speak to, I mean, just like Paul, the way he related to the pagans.
Yeah.
But Satanists, they're just a completely different breed. I mean, they have no desire for truth. They don't care what you believe. They don't even care what they believe. Their entire message, their entire purpose is to cause chaos, to cause
rebellion,
to promote immorality, and just, yeah, it's just this manifested embodiment of rebellion.
If I recall, we had a conversation about this several years ago, and you actually told me that, like, as at one point as a pagan, you actually really disliked Satanists, and it's because,
oh, absolutely, the pagan community at large hate Satanists. I mean, they're just so anti-structure. They're so against anything that's created order. I mean, you talk to pagans, they're all about seeing the balance and the divine mind behind creation, or that is creation, that's in creation. But Satanism is just chaos. It's destruction. And the two are not alliances. They're not friends.
Yeah. And that's not... And don't get us wrong. Like, we're not promoting paganism.
But Christians have an ally in the pagans when it comes to the stance against.
Yeah, the way that. Yeah, there's some differences here between the two. Like, it's a little more complicated than people think. One is calling upon principalities.
If your goal is to re-enchant creation,
mm-hmm.
Satanists are the antithesis of that. They are the exact opposite of that thought.
Yeah, that's interesting. That's really interesting and probably sketchy to some people, but that's what we do.
Yeah.
But really interesting. But yeah, that always stuck out to me, and I always remember you saying that as a pagan, whenever you were in that part of your life, that you looked at that and that you saw it as, even then, you saw it as very destructive and anti-nature, casting off everything that you were seeing in nature. And, you know, in some ways, I mean, that's even the argument of the Christian. It's casting off the natural order that God has created.
Right.
It's casting off the binary. It's casting off the things that he's written in nature.
Which I think is why Aleister Crowley would absolutely be opposed to Satanism today. I mean, his work focuses on the balances and sciences in the occult, sacred geometry, things like that, things that Satanism and Satanists absolutely oppose and actively seek to destroy.
Yeah, that's interesting. Well, Richie, we're coming in now on 50 minutes, so doesn't seem like this conversation has went on that long.
Yeah.
Feels like that we barely skimmed the surface, and really we did.
Yep.
This is a much, much bigger topic. That's just the tip of the iceberg. And I didn't realize that until I started researching it a little bit this week in preparation for this episode. I didn't realize that the rabbit hole went so deep, but it does.
The rabbit hole is literally could be endless. I mean, it's all based on the individual.
Yeah. So, but that does it for this week's edition of the Sword and Staff. We'll end the conversation there. Maybe at some point this is a conversation that we'll revisit at some point and dive a little bit deeper into. But hey, we hope that this is a good primer for you guys, that it's helped you to think about this topic in some new ways that perhaps you've never thought about it before. And maybe that's even equipped you to think about, like, okay, if I encounter this, like, how am I going to minister to this person? Because they're dealing with something far more sinister than what I actually thought that they were. So that's something to be mindful of, okay?
Right.
So, but hopefully this episode was helpful. If you guys have any feedback, let us know what you think about this episode. We would love to know what you think about it. Your feedback helps us in crafting episodes to think through things that we haven't thought through. And yeah, it's just helpful in general. So please let us give us your feedback. Also, feel free to share this episode with your friends. And also, make sure that whatever platform that you're listening on, whether it be Apple Podcasts or Spotify, whatever it is, that you make sure to leave us an honest 5-star review. That helps us to be found. It helps us with search engine optimization, all of those types of things. And we would just really appreciate it if you did that for us. So also, if you want more content, head on over to www.patreon.com/swordandstafforder. For just $5 a month, you can get the Sword and Staff Uncut. And whenever we do that, basically what you get is you get episodes delivered to you faster. You get bonus content that nobody else gets. Richie, from time to time, we do Patreon-exclusive episodes that nobody else gets. We do Patreon update videos on a monthly basis. We do question and answers for our patrons on a monthly basis. Which we actually need to get ready for. We actually need to give put the post out there so that our patrons can comment in and chime in and let us know what to talk about. So patrons, get ready for that. That's coming this week, and or that's coming in the next week. So Richie, you and I, we're going to take next week off because it's the last. I think it's the last week of the month, and what we're doing is we use that as a way to plan out the next month's worth of podcasts. So will be no Sword and Staff edition for next week, but we'll be back the week after with a brand new edition of the Sword and Staff. We hope you guys are excited about that. If you have anything you'd like for us to cover, make sure to let us know that. Yeah, we listen. We listen. And I can't tell you how many times we've done an episode or talked about something in a chin wag because someone told us, hey, check this out. Right. Let me know what you think. So we listen. We pay attention. So all right, guys. Well, that wraps it up for this week. Thank you guys so much for listening. And Richie, you got anything else before we sign off?
Just questions, comments, concerns. If you have any questions about the occult, about Aleister Crowley, about Satanism, about anything that we've covered today, definitely reach out to us privately in the group, on Instagram, our Facebook group, anything like that.
Yep. Sounds good. Well, thank you guys so much for listening again this week, and we'll see y'all next time.
See you then.
See you.